listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, we're, kind of post-suicidal impulse and now moving forward. I was just telling Shane and Troy and Danielle, I was 13 years old in 1964 when my dad just danced his heart out for Barry Goldwater. And, of course, Barry Goldwater went down in flames. And I remember my dad saying, okay, well, you know, we got to move on. You don't give up. You don't stop. You learn from your experience and you move forward. And I think we need to do that. And there's some really significant learnings here that I think are of consequence. By the way, John Nichols is going to drop by at 20 after this hour. Our third hour, Senator Sanders is going to be with us for the whole hour. He can't be with us on Friday, so today will be brunch with Bernie in our third hour. So get ready for that. Our second hour is open, and I will be talking with you about my thoughts on all these things. Number one, sometimes in order to know what is, you have to ask the question, what would happen if something wasn't? For example, if the Koch brothers had not put hundreds of paid staffers on the ground in Florida, would Rick Scott have won? If the Koch brothers had not put hundreds of millions of dollars into races all around the country, would Republicans have won? I think, frankly, the answer is no. Republicans would not have won without the Koch brothers, which means that the Koch brothers should be the number one story of this election cycle, and you will not hear a word about them in any of the corporate media. Why? Well, first of all, a lot of their money ended up with the corporate media. Secondly, they've done a fairly good job of concealing an awful lot of what they're doing, and reporters tend to be lazy, especially in this day and age where, you know, most good investigative reporters have been fired or laid off, and, you know, most reporters are stenographers. So, anyhow, I see, and here's why I say this is of consequence. The Koch brothers. This from Forbes magazine, right? Forbes magazine, a piece by Tim Warstall. And he points out, he says, we can quibble on the details, but the basic premise is valid. Koch Industries' potential profits due to the Keystone XL pipeline could easily reach $100 billion. More than the Koch's current combined net worth of $92 billion. These profits could roughly be projected by multiplying two key figures, 15 billion barrels of recoverable, profitable to produce tar sands crude oil that the Koch's could have on its reported 2 million acres in Alberta's tar sands territory. The Koch's are the largest American owners of tar sands in Canada. Multiplied by $15 billion in gross profit from production, or $15 per barrel, due to the Keystone XL pipeline. You add these two figures together, produces $225 billion in gross revenue. And then Koch's refining subsidiary, Flint Hill Resources, is going to make $120 billion less in profits due to Keystone, but the Keystone was still, so bottom line, they'd make $100 billion. So here's the question. And actually, there's a much better piece on this over at America Blog that was written back by Gaius Publius back in January 24th. The headline is Koch Brothers could make $100 billion profit from Keystone Pipeline. So Koch Brothers dumped $500 million, $500 million into the election. A bunch of Republicans got elected. And the Republicans have announced, this was in the New York Times this morning, that their first order of business, their first agenda, is going to be to pass the Keystone XL Pipeline. The Koch Brothers only worth about $80 billion. They could make $100 billion on the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, just think about this for a minute. $500 million is to a billion as 50 cents is to a dollar. $1 billion is to $100 billion as $1 is to $100. So this is the equivalent of spending 50 cents to make $100. Do you know of any investment anywhere outside of Las Vegas, which is absolutely not reliable, any reliable investment where you put in 50 cents and over the next 5-10 years you make $100? Do you know of any? I don't know of any. But the Koch brothers do. Invest 50 cents in the Republican Party, you make $100. Invest $500 million in the Republican Party and you'll make $100 billion. These guys are not idiots. They're businessmen. So anyway, this in my mind, this is the biggest story of the election cycle is, you know, who's funding this and why? And here's the thing that as somebody who has, you know, I've owned two ad agencies. Or I was a partner in one. I owned the other. I taught advertising and marketing for the American Marketing Centers. I've done consulting, marketing, advertising, communications consulting for at least 400 of the Fortune 500 companies for, you know, the NSA, the CIA, Naval Intelligence, big corporations, lots of nonprofits. I can tell you unequivocally from my experience in the world, having done this for years and years, advertising works. There's a reason why when you turn on the TV, you see ads. I'm looking at the CNN screen right now in our studio. I'm seeing an ad for Humana, right? Why do they run that ad? Because it will make them money. If they spend $1 million on the ad, it'll make $2 million for them. The only reason anybody runs an ad is because it's going to make more of the money than the ad costs. So just compare a couple of things here. Across the country, it was a huge victory for progressive values and progressive issues. Just consider this for a moment. The minimum wage was raised in Arkansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota, and Alaska, and was in an advisory, it wasn't law, but it's advising the legislators to do it, in Illinois. 70% of the voters in D.C. voted to decriminalize pot, which was also decriminalized in Oregon and Alaska, legalized. The anti-abortion personhood amendments in North Dakota and Colorado, both defeated, even though Cory Gardner got elected in Colorado. See, this is the irony. The Republicans now have a filibuster proof if they can, for Keystone XL, if they can get a few Democrats, and hey, there's enough Koch money to go around for Keystone XL, and the GOP says Keystone's going to be their first vote, or one of their first votes. Fracking bans were passed in Texas, California, and Ohio. Paid sick time was passed in communities in Massachusetts, California, Connecticut, and New Jersey. In California, Prop 47 passed, which decreases felony. It basically says drugs are no longer felonies. And if you have, you know, under $950 worth of stolen stuff, it's not a felony anymore. And at least 10,000 people get out of jail. Washington passed gun control. They closed the gun show loophole. Florida passed medical marijuana. Now, it didn't hit the 60% necessary to amend the Constitution, but it was over 50%. In New Jersey, they passed bail bond reform. These were all, every time an issue was voted on, progressives won. So why were Republicans who were opposed to all of these things elected by the same people who voted for them? Why did people go in and vote to raise the minimum wage and then vote for a Republican who's opposed to there even being a minimum wage? Why did people go into the polling place and reject fetal personhood and then elect people who are in favor of it? Why did they, you know, why this dissonance? Well, it's very simple. Because hundreds of millions, billions of dollars. This is a $4 billion election. Because billions of dollars were spent on advertising for these campaigns. You give me enough money, I can sell toothpaste as cake frosting. Honest to God. You can create a new fad. Hey, you know that old toothpaste is too sweet. Sugar's bad for you. That old cake frosting. Put toothpaste on your cakes. It's good for you. It's got calcium. You know, with enough advertising, you can convince anybody of anything, by and large. And that's the lesson of this election. The big winners, the people who made it all possible. Antonin Scalia, Tony Kennedy, Roberts, Thomas, Alito, they're the big winners.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And, of course, the Koch brothers and the other billionaires that, you know, the Supreme Court sucks up to and handed this election to. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Pick up some of your thoughts on this. You've heard mine now. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. I was watching CNN last night, and they were talking about what needs to be done so Ted Cruz can be elected president.
What? Jeez, pardon me.
He was born in Canada, right?
So he was born in Canada, yes. And he was he had Canadian citizenship until last year.
Well, don't you still have to be born in America to be president?
You have to be a natural-born citizen. Nobody has ever defined what that means, except that it probably means you're not black.
Yeah. So what are they going to do? Have to get an amendment changed or something?
No. They just ignore it. They will just ignore it. But,
okay.
Ted Cruz is the new Senate Majority Leader. Make no mistake about it. So.
Yeah, I know. It looked to me like last night he looked like he had gotten everything for Christmas he had ever wanted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He is going to be the tail that wags the dog of Mitch McConnell and the rest of the Senate and everything else.
Yeah,
I mean, it's going to be pretty startling.
Well, here we even reelected our attorney general who has been indicted for 23 felony counts. We haven't had the trial yet.
Right.
I think I'll immigrate great somewhere else.
Yeah. No, it's pretty amazing. I went to bed early, when it was obvious that the Senate was lost to the Democrats. I thought, oh, okay, this is what, I've seen this movie before. This happened 2 years before Bill Clinton left office. And, it also happened to George W. Bush, and it also happened to his dad, maybe it was Ronald Reagan. Yeah, it was Reagan. It happened to Reagan. And, in some ways, this might be the best thing that could happen to Democrats in terms of 2016. The challenge is going to be, what does President Obama do between now and the end of his term? Is he going to be able to stand firm? Is he going to be able to fight these guys? Or is he going to start caving in? That's, but I mean, if you look at the races, right, in this election, the Democrats were defending a whole bunch of seats. I don't have the number right in front of me, but in 2016, the Republicans had to defend 24 Senate seats, including 5 in states that President Obama won twice, while Democrats only have to defend 10 seats. This from a piece that it was Jonathan Alter wrote, as I recall. Oh no, this is from the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress. And 2016 is a presidential election year, so you're going to have more people of color, young, single women, that kind of thing, turning out. So, frankly, I think, if history is any indicator and the future, is consistent.
They called our elections 3 minutes after the polls closed.
Yeah, well, that's because they had gathered all. They had the information in the last 1%. Hour or two.
1%.
Yeah.
Results.
And now we've got, by the way, now we've got a Fox News commentator pointing out that the polls were off by 5 points to the benefit of Democrats in a half a dozen states. And he's like, I think there's something fishy here. And he's calling for an investigation on Fox News. One of these guys, are the voting machines rigged or were the polls rigged? Interesting question. Norma, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. John Nichols is going to be with us. Stick around. Here with you, and John Nichols, Washington correspondent for The Nation magazine, on the line with us. And hey, John, how are you?
I am just fine, Tom.
Me too, actually. I think it was a great day yesterday for progressive issues. Virtually every progressive issue that was on the ballot, from fracking bans to paid sick leave to Prop 47 in California, gun control in Washington, medical marijuana, bail reform, personhood, pot legalization, minimum wage, all of them won. We won all of them.
I could top you, brother.
Okay.
First off, let's acknowledge that what you just described was pretty much the Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders mandate from last night.
Absolutely.
That I'm not sure will lead the news.
It's being completely ignored by everybody except you and me.
But here, let me top you. I think I can.
Okay.
Ripon, Wisconsin is the birthplace of the Republican Party.
Oh, really? I thought it was Jackson, Michigan. Okay.
No, you're a Michigander. You guys always...
Yeah, of course.
No, Ripon, Wisconsin, several months before.
All right.
Recognized on a stamp as the birthplace of the Republican Party, last night just voted 80% in favor of amending the Constitution to get big money out of politics.
Whoa!
In fact, there were...
How did I miss that one?
What's that? That's a pretty good one, isn't it?
This is just a town that did this?
This is the city of Ripon, Wisconsin.
R-I-P-I-N?
Yeah, R-I-P-O-N. Birthplace of the Republican Party.
Wow.
And they weren't alone. All across Wisconsin, down in Florida, communities all across this country, you were seeing 70, 80% votes for getting money out of politics. Tragically, in many of the same places, they were voting for these, you know, Coke-funded, you know, billionaire-driven candidates, people given an actual choice, saying, do I want this politics? Do I want a politics that fits with everything you were just describing a few minutes ago? Or do I want a politics where the money's out? They said, we want the money out.
Right.
We want the corporations controlled. So this gets to the heart of the matter, and it's one of the most important things to understand about yesterday. We have entered into an absurd, fully dysfunctional political cycle in this country. We have presidential elections with a just okay level of turnout. Nothing decent compared to, you know, countries we'd want to compare ourselves with. But then we have off-year elections with an incredibly low level of turnout manipulated by massive amounts of money that actually drive more people away from the polls and draw them in. So we end up in this horrible situation where we're whipsawed as a country, you know, a mandate from a presidential election versus a mandate from a non-presidential election, all slathered in money, all drenched in corporate influence. And in many ways, Tom, I think the only real signals that we get of where the American people are on these referendums.
Yeah, I agree. You've seen, I'm assuming, John, you're familiar with the pieces written from Gaius Publius over at America Blog and over at Forbes magazine and whatnot, that the Koch brothers are sitting on over $100 billion worth of tar sands oil up in Canada. They're the largest American owners of Canadian land, 2 million acres apparently, and they need to get that to their refineries on the Texas coast so that they can refine the poison out of it, dump it into the American air, and then export the gasoline and diesel fuel. And they'll, you know, their net worth isn't even $100 billion. They could double their net worth. So they drop $500 million into an election, and they make $100 billion. That's like investing 50 cents and making $100. I don't know of any investment on earth that returns that kind of return.
Well, Tom, you are describing one of the themes of the book Bob McChesney and I wrote together a couple of years ago, Dollarocracy.
Yep.
And we argued in that book, basically research based off the 2012 election, looking at the incredible amounts of money flowing to both parties, to candidates that some listeners to this show probably like, and came away with the conclusion that the single best investment for rich people is politics.
Right.
You can't beat it. Sheldon Adelson, everybody made a big deal about Sheldon Adelson back in 2012 that, you know, he dumped the better part of $200 million into campaigns. Quite a few of them lost, admittedly. But do you know that at the end of the year, he gave himself, via some stock manipulation, a $1.2 billion bonus? So
wow.
$200 million, man, that's nothing.
Right.
I mean, you can give yourself a bonus like that. But here's the deal. The return on that investment, even if 90% of your donations, your expenditure, goes awry, doesn't elect who you want, even if you get a tiny portion of it in certain areas, the return is so overwhelming.
Well, and not only that, they're running this money through 501c3s. They're running it through nonprofits, which means that they can write it off as a charitable contribution.
Oh, and I got a better one. Let's try and outdo each other here.
Got about a minute left, John.
I could do it in a half minute. Everybody's running around saying this is a $4 billion campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong. That's just the federal spending. You start to look at states, judicial elections, local elections, I'm going to guarantee you we're going to be into the $6, $7 billion. And that's money that in most cases nobody even really tracks and nobody even talks about.
Right. And because hundreds of these groups got funded the day after October 15th, the reporting date, we won't know for another year where all that money, you know, came from or even how much it was. It's really pretty breathtaking. John Nichols, the Washington correspondent with The Nation magazine, thenation.com. You can read his piece on the midterm losses over at The Nation. Thank you, John.
Thanks, brother.
Good talking with you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So time to process and dump. Right? Your thoughts on this. The therapy session will be in 6 minutes. Stick around. 28 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick reminder, if you call into our show and get a weird message that says the number you've called is no longer in service or something to that effect, it means that all 12 of our inbound lines are full. And for some reason, instead of delivering a busy signal to people, it's giving them this, you know, there is no such number message. And so just ignore that and try back, you know, in a little bit. And because if all 12 lines are not full, then you'll get right through. But right now they are all full. So if you try and call, you may or may not get that weird error message. We're trying to figure out what the deal is. We got a problem with the phone company. So that said, John in Vernon Hills, Illinois. Hey, John, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hey, John.
I've called you once before, and we had a nice conversation, and I consider you my guru. And I just wanted to make a comment about yesterday's elections. Mm-hmm. One, I think it was a vote against the president being black. And two, I believe now that we are definitely in a bipartisan government, by being spelled B-U-Y.
Yeah.
Both brothers, Karl Rove, all of the black money.
Yeah, this is the cancer stage of capitalism. It's the cancer stage of democracy. If you read Federalist 10, Federalist 12, James Madison's warnings against this sort of thing, against faction.
Yeah.
Faction being,
yeah,
you know, basically rich people operating in their own best interests and to hell with the interests of the country and the people. That's what faction is, and that's what we have. We just saw a faction win nationally, win elections all over the country. John, excellent point. Thank you for the call. Larry in Catawba, Virginia. Hey, Larry.
Hey, I'm on my cell phone. I'm actually calling from Sandusky, Ohio. But my comment is that this election provides Republicans with a golden opportunity to win it. The method of the operations they've used before, and that is they have Republican Congress, Republican Senate. They could pass all sorts of cuts to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. They could repeal most of Obamacare, things that affect a lot of working families. And then, you know, next thing you know, blame on the black guy in the White House. And then the next election cycle, they'll point out, well, all these cuts and all this stuff happened while Obama was in the White House. They've done it before.
Yeah.
And the American people are dumb enough to give them a pass on it every time.
Yeah. No, in fact, you had Republicans running against their own policies, particularly Cory Gardner in Colorado, you know, running against the fact that Mark Udall had not been able to stop Cory Gardner's policies from passing Congress. You're absolutely right. And this is what happens when Democrats surrender their principles. Marianne Williamson published a really nice piece on this over at Huffington Post this morning. It's worth checking out. Larry, I'm with you. Thank you very much for the call. Well said. Mike in Lomita, California, listening to KPFK. Hey, Mike.
All right, Tom, just a quick aside. You remember prior week that first the private corporation's resupply rocket for the International Space Station blew up on the launch pad?
Yeah.
And then Virgin Galactic Spaceship 2 blew apart 10 miles above the Mojave Desert.
Right.
Is it not time that we admit that private enterprise cannot do anything right and we make all corporations or enterprises with 6 or more employees be owned by the people?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but I think it's really important that we join a national conversation about what should be private and what should be public. And we need to really be teaching civics in our schools, because so many people now, particularly people under 50, don't even understand the distinction. And it's a real tragedy. I don't think that our rocket systems ever should have been privatized, but you know, it's the direction we've gone, and it doesn't look like it's working out all that well. Mike, thanks for the call. Excellent point, though. Hack in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hey, Hack, what's up?
Don't be a bit surprised if Mitch McConnell does away with the filibuster.
Oh yeah, because the filibuster will be the only thing stopping them. Although
The reason why he wouldn't do away with the filibuster is because President Obama can veto things and it takes 60 votes, maybe, is it 60 or 66? 67. It takes two-thirds of the votes of the Senate to override a veto. And Mitch McConnell does not have that many votes unless it's...
Wait, two-thirds of the Senate or two-thirds of both houses?
Both houses.
Yeah, two-thirds of both houses.
Right. Yeah, and McConnell doesn't have that, with the exception probably of Keystone and Shafta, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Those are two areas where there's a small contingent of Democrats who have been bought off by the fossil fuel industry and transnational corporations, respectively, enough to join the 100% of Republicans who have been bought off by those industries, and where the president has been either waffling or simply been, in my opinion, on the wrong side of the issue. And indicated that he's been pushing for TPP, Shafta, and we don't know, you know, where he's at on Keystone XL. He hasn't said. He is going to be giving a speech this afternoon or a press conference at 2:50 Eastern time, which is the last 10 minutes of our show. Bernie Sanders will be with us. He'll be answering questions, so we won't be carrying that live, but unless Bernie has to, you know, jump off the phone. But it's going to be interesting to see because, you know, he's talking about doing something with immigration. If he does, Ted Cruz is saying if he does, let's impeach him. This could be a really interesting couple of years. Hack, thanks a lot for the call. Dan in Erie, Colorado. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Calling about the Colorado election. Of course, John Hickenlooper won by 22,000 votes.
Yep.
So Mark Udall just screwed up and ran a lousy campaign because the same voters that put Hickenlooper in should have put Udall back in.
Well, but see, you didn't have, for 3 days in a row before Election Day, you didn't have NPR, Mara Liasson and the people doing their political packages. You didn't have NPR promoting Hickenlooper's opponent. You did have NPR promoting Cory Gardner, who was Udall's opponent. I mean, just nakedly promoting him. So that may have had something to do with it. I was predicting yesterday. NPR is very, very influential. A lot of people listen to Morning Edition, to that show. And, you know, in Colorado, it is in most parts of Colorado. In fact, I think in probably all of Colorado with regard to commercial radio, now that Denver, Clear Channel recently shut down their Denver progressive station. So now it's basically, you know, if you want to hear anything that even closely resembles an occasional progressive point of view anywhere in the state of Colorado, it's NPR. And, you know, with NPR cheerleading for Cory Gardner, I'm frankly not surprised. Dan, thank you for the call. Susan in Wauna, Washington. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Basically, I just wanted to, and you may not agree, but that's where I guess we'll disagree. This whole takeover by the Republicans, it's on both sides, really. And I think the sooner you're able to actually open up and discuss that, because like 2 years ago, you were saying, you know, people who run for political office have to have some sort of mental, you know, personality disorder. And now it's like you've backed away from that. But I think both sides are truly to blame, that they will sell themselves out like, you know, cheap whores or something. And it just...
The Democratic Progressive Caucus in the House of Representatives continues to be the largest caucus in the U.S. House of Representatives. The Democratic Party, in many regards, and many Democrats, including in the Senate, good people like Sherrod Brown, continue to espouse openly, loudly, vigorously, Al Franken. Al Franken was overwhelmingly elected in Minnesota. Why? Because he said, I'm campaigning on raising the minimum wage, on stopping Keystone XL, on clean water. He campaigned on classic traditional Democratic values. Susan, you're right. There are some wrong people in politics. And I have pointed that out. I think that there are more wrong people at the head of large corporations. I think that's where you find more sociopaths than in politics. But to say both parties do this is to say to potential Democratic voters, don't even bother. And that's the wrong message. It's a message that I absolutely disagree with. Susan, thank you for the call. Al in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Al.
You're absolutely right, Tom. Incremental steps. The problem with the far left, and I don't want to say any names, but Robert Gibbs referred to the professional left as always being the you know, the talking heads on the radio who is basically wants and their needs overextend their intended purpose and often mix the message to their listeners that both parties are the same.
Right.
And
you will not hear that here. There's no
airwaves, not you, Tom.
No circular firing squad on our show.
Not your show.
Yeah.
But because you've made it clear that, and I've heard you, and I've heard Randy Rhodes always talk about incremental politics.
Yep.
The art of understanding politics is to know that when a president is the commander in chief, he's there in the Oval Office. He doesn't have the power like everybody thinks he does. Okay.
Yeah.
There's three branches of government. You got the executive, the judicial, and the legislative branch. You got 535 members in Congress. Now, when Eric Cantor was the guy that scheduled all the votes to be, you know, to be put on the floor, there was not one vote that was scheduled for an up or down vote. That means for a gun reform law, it would not even get an up or down vote.
Right.
Now, when you hear the talking heads on the airwaves, spewing out all this venom that Obama's a weak, that he's the capitulator in chief, and they don't take into effect that he's inherited over 200 tornadoes in the Midwest, the Fukushima earthquake, the BP oil spill, the worst frozen market in American history.
He's inherited 34 years of Reaganomics. He has inherited a Supreme Court decision that said billionaires can control politics in America. I'm with you, Al. I'm with you. Thank you very much for the call. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour. This is not Obama's fault.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
In fact, if anything, if you look at the Democrats who proudly proclaimed their alliance with Obama, like Al Franken, they won easy. Walking away, they won. And welcome back. Stephen in Maui, Hawaii, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Stephen, you have some news on the GMO thing in Maui?
Yeah, good morning, Tom, and aloha from Maui in Hawaii.
Aloha.
Yeah, I called you a few weeks ago about the GMO moratorium, and amazingly, we won last night, 51-49%. We beat Monsanto and Dow Chemical.
Wow. They're still counting the votes in Oregon, you know, on just labeling. But this is an absolute ban on the planting of GMO products on the island of Maui. Do I have that right?
Exactly. There's way more than a labeling thing. This affects us here. All the spraying, all the GMO planting, which is done. It's only 1% of the agriculture.
Right.
It's done by by Monsanto and Dow.
Right.
And they tried to make it that we were going to ban all kinds of farming, that if you were growing a zucchini in your backyard, you were going to go to jail.
Right.
And it didn't work. They spent $8 million. We had $150,000. And we didn't have the politicians. We didn't have the politicians. We didn't have the newspapers. We didn't have the celebrities who live here. It was totally a citizen's thing. As you said, get active, tag your it. That's what happened here.
That is wonderful. That's great news, Stephen. Thank you for sharing that story.
Thanks, Tom.
I appreciate it. Thanks for the heads up. Jesse, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Miami, Florida. Hey, Jesse, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hey, I think Obama and the Democrats don't defend themselves because they see the conflict in capitalism. You have one group that profits from another. So how do you keep the peace?
I think they do defend themselves. I just don't think that the media is friendly to them. We've got a corporate media that's largely Republicans. I mean, Republicans are corporate. The media is corporate. The media is Republican.
Yeah, but the thing I'm trying to say is look at the student debt thing, and then look at the government was profiting from them, and then you got the private sector. So the point in being that if Bernie or whoever is going to try to get people to really come out and vote instead of just voting for hope, they're going to have something solid. And the only thing I could see that could offer the students or either the workers and non-workers from going to war, which, you know, the 1% would love, is by having something to offer that could bring them together. And what could bring them together? Something that's going to say, okay, you ain't going to make a profit. You're going to be able to survive. You talk about something sacred people need to have. Surviving is sacred. Even the rich want to survive. But to bring us together and avoid a war between the workers and the non-workers, we're going to need to come together saying, we're going to have to invest in being civilized instead of investing in greed. So yeah, that's pretty much it. If Bernie, Elizabeth, going to say, okay, guys, we're going to have to do better than Obama's hope. What will bring us, what would keep another Confederacy war? You know what I'm talking about. But
sure,
what could avoid that? Because that's key.
Yeah.
They threw all that money in this election now because they know capitalism is on the ropes. So if we're going to avoid a war and keep us people who's working versus non-workers, well, Tom, you know what I'm saying. I think most of your...
I do, and you said it well, Jesse, you're absolutely right. Democrats need to be channeling their inner FDR, and if they don't have an inner FDR, they need to get out of the way. Jesse, thanks a lot for the call. 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. Josh in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Hey, Josh, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I got to say, as a conservative that lives, I live in South Carolina, and every time somebody brings like that first, I think it was your first caller that said that it had to do these elections had to do with the color of Obama's skin. South Carolina just elected Tim Scott, the only black senator that was voted in the South. And as a Republican,
right.
It has to do with values and principles. I'm not saying that there's not racism out there. I'm not saying there's not racist people. But whenever
Utah just elected a black Republican too.
Huh?
Utah just elected a black Republican too. Miss Love. I forget her first name.
Yeah. Miss Love. Yeah. But, it really bothers me when people get on TV and they talk about, problems in the black community. They talk about, kids growing up without fathers and all this kind of stuff. You'll always hear black people say, don't blanket all black people as having those problems. Well, don't blanket all white people in the South as being racist. A lot of people that I know that disagree with Obama highly, that don't agree with anything he tries to put forth, is simply because he's a progressive and they're a conservative. If Ben Carson, those same people love Ben Carson, and I'm not saying that this would happen because I don't think the Republican establishment would let a guy like Ben Carson run.
People who don't know who you're talking about, Josh, Ben Carson is a very wealthy black, what is he, a surgeon? He's a businessman also.
Right.
And he's been calling for the impeachment of Obama. I mean, he's like, to the right of John Boehner. And good point. However, I don't know if you saw the report last week. I forget which university did it, but they analyzed the opinions of Tea Partiers. And they found that the thing that is the greatest predictor of whether somebody is a member of the Tea Party is not their stand on the minimum wage, not their stand on privatizing Social Security, not their stand on voucherizing Medicare, not their stand on gay marriage, not their stand on foreign policy. It's whether or not they think that a black person should not be president of the United States. Racism. Well, that is the greatest predictor of Tea Party membership. So, you're right. It's not all Republicans in the South, but it's a startling number of white Republicans in the South.
Well, Tom, let me just say this, okay? If people make everything about race now, okay? If Ben Carson were to run against Hillary Clinton, black voters that voted for Obama, their votes would be going to Hillary Clinton, not Ben Carson. It has nothing to do. And when people say that people voted for Obama because he was black, maybe in the first election, and everybody was excited to have the first black president in the United States and all that kind of stuff. When they voted for him again, it's his policies aligned.
No, I agree. That's why Bill Clinton was called the first black president. Because his policies were consistent with what many folks in the African American community were concerned about. Josh, I got to move along. Thank you for the call, Andy in Jonestown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Andy.
Yeah, my question is basically, where's the outrage? I believe that we've pretty much lost our democracy. I've heard a quote on MSNBC this morning that this Republican-controlled Congress is going to be in Republican control for several election cycles now.
I don't think so.
Well, I hope you're right, and I actually agree with you on that. But, see, gerrymandering. In 2012, Democrats get 1 million more votes for the House of Representatives. How is that a democratically elected House if the Republicans maintain control of
it? No, you're right, and that's the bad news. The good news is it doesn't influence the Senate. It only influences the House. And the other good news is that, you know, hopefully in the 2016 election, we get a Democrat. It's just like, you know, Reagan lost in his sixth year, the same as Obama's. He lost both the House and the Senate. He went into the election with 53 Republican senators. He came out of it with 45 Republican senators, so pretty much identical to what happened yesterday. In fact, even worse. And yet Reagan was able to hand the presidency off to his vice president, to another Republican. So, you know, it's not the end of the world. And with regard to where is the outrage, I think there's a hell of a lot of outrage out there. I think there's a lot of people who are very concerned about the amount of money that's being poured into this election. I think the people who have the greatest amount of egg on their face are the members of the Supreme Court who said, gee, wouldn't it be a good idea if we just turned our electoral process in the United States over to the billionaires? Because the billionaires have said, fine, we'll step up and take this thing. And this should cause all of us to say, hey, wait a minute. We need the old, you know, the Koch brother, Daddy Koch, Fred Koch, used to pay to have signs, billboards all over the United States in the early 60s that said impeach Earl Warren because of the 1954 Brown v. Board decision. And now it's time to put signs all over the country that say impeach John Roberts. Andy, thanks for the call. Alan in Bear, Delaware. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to vote yesterday, and I couldn't help but think about you, what happened. It was funny. I was in line, and where I vote at, basically they have a big book of computer printouts with all the registered voters. And you basically just have to sign your name next to what's printed out.
Right.
Give you a little card, take it over to the booth, and you vote. Well, I got up there, and she goes, can I have some photo ID, which in Delaware you're not required to have.
Right.
And I said, is that really mandatory? I have that. And she's like, oh, yes. And I said, I don't think so. And then finally, she looked like she was going to kick me out of the line and say, no, you can't vote. Finally, a woman next to her said, no, it's not required, but you have to fill out this other form, blah, 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 blah. Now, as much as people make this about race, she was a person of color. I wasn't. But I almost didn't get to vote yesterday.
Yeah.
Had this other woman not stepped in. I had no problem showing her my ID, but that's the flip end of this whole voter ID thing. And I was on the other end of it yesterday, and I couldn't help but laugh. But I just wanted to share that with you. I just thought it was pretty funny that
yeah, it's and this is one of the things where this Paul Weyrich strategy, where, you know, Paul Weyrich famously said Republicans leverage in the elections quite candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down. They have succeeded with years and years of hysteria and propaganda about, you know, the, you know, busloads of Mexicans showing up to vote who are not citizens of the United States, you know, which is a myth. Right. But it's an absolute myth. But they have succeeded in even causing poll workers to think everybody has to have ID, even in states, like you say, in Delaware, where it's not necessary to have ID. You just have to do the biometric analysis, which is signing the thing, and they compare your signature, which is actually harder to forge than it is to forge a driver's license or to forge ID. So, Alan, thank you for the call. It's really astounding when you think of it. We've had a system for, I don't know, decades, maybe centuries, comparing signatures. This is biometric data, right? The way you do your autograph, no one else can do unless they're a really talented forger. It is totally unique. We've had a biometric analysis right up there with fingerprints for years. But the Republicans say, oh, that's not good enough.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So, you know, remarkable headlines over at the Center for American Progress's blog, Think Progress. Why last night was not just huge for pot, but for the entire criminal justice system. Yet Prop 47 in California passed, descheduling a whole bunch of felonies so that over 10,000 people get let out of prison shortly. Another headline, even in deep red states, voters reject radical personhood measures. Yes, they did. They didn't reject the politicians who support them, however. Why is that? Well, it's because of advertising. It's because of the power of advertising dollars. With enough money to advertise something, you can convince people that they should be taking painkillers that cause them to have heart attacks, that they should be, which we all know has happened. Vioxx, remember? I think it was Vioxx was the name of the drug, as I recall. Whatever that, you know, not an ACE inhibitor. What are the two enzymes? Aspirin inhibits one. Anyway, it was a platelet clotting inhibitor thingy, Bob. So, you know, with enough advertising, you can convince people to do all kinds of things. Doesn't mean it's right. What we saw last night was what happens when $4 to $7 billion. Let's just say $7 billion, because that includes the state and local races, and as well as the national races. When $7 billion gets dumped into advertising, you know, you give me that kind of ad budget, I could sell pretty much anything, even really absurd things. So, anyhow, but there's some good news in all this. And the good news, in my opinion, is there's this structural thing. Every senators serve for 6 years, and members of the House of Representatives serve for 2 years. So every single member, all 435 members of the House of Representatives, are up for re-election every 2 years, every election cycle. One-third of the Senate is up for re-election every 2 years. And interestingly, this time, this election, there were a bunch of Democrats in kind of conservative-leaning states like Marian Landrieu in Louisiana or Mark Begich in Alaska, who were defending their seats. And looks like they're going to lose. This is not a surprise. This was predicted back in, 2012, rather, after those elections. There was no shortage of political commentators saying, you know, the Democrats are going to lose the Senate in 2014. Because there's so many Democrats defending seats in states that are toss-up states. But the same thing is going to happen to Republicans in 2 years. In 2 years, the Republicans are going to have to defend 24 Senate seats, including in five states where Obama won twice. And the Democrats only have to defend 10 seats. And in 2 years, it'll be a presidential election year, which means that the traditionally Democratic constituency, young people, single women, people of color, tend to show up in larger numbers during presidential election years. But if you look at what won last night, yes, there were a bunch of candidates who are basically right-wing crank extremists. You know, Joni Ernst, Tom Tillis, you can go through the list, right? They are right-wing crazies. But when people were presented with very clear and specific policies, the people of America voted progressive, which is why I believe that had Alison Lundgren Grimes, had Kay Hagan, had Mary Landrieu embraced President Obama, embraced Obamacare, and embraced progressive values and positions, particularly economic ones, they would have kicked the Republicans' butts, as Al Franken did in Minnesota. They would just absolutely win. Because, I mean, just look at this. In Arkansas, this is Arkansas, the Deep South. Nebraska, South Dakota, the new, red Midwest. Illinois, Alaska. In these states, minimum wage increases were on the ballot, and the majority of people voted for them. Yes, increase the minimum wage. It's a progressive position. In Washington, D.C., nearly 70% of the voters said decriminalize pot. legalize pot, actually. Not even decriminalize. Legalize it. Legalize it, tax it, regulate it, like alcohol. Same in Oregon and Alaska. In North Dakota and Colorado, there were ballot measures to basically do personhood for fetuses, which would ban a lot of forms of birth control, ban all abortions, criminalize pregnancy, basically. If you get pregnant, you have to report yourself to the police department. If you have a miscarriage, you have to present yourself to the police department for inspection. These were rejected, even though the politicians in those states who support them, like Cory Gardner in Colorado, is still on the federal personhood bill as a co-sponsor. Regardless of what Mara Liasson said on NPR, it was a lie. Cory Gardner is still on that bill. So people voted for the candidate, but they voted against the policy. Now, they voted for the candidate because millions of dollars in advertising. In Texas, California, and Ohio, you've had fracking bans pass. Fracking bans. In Massachusetts, California, Connecticut, New Jersey, and various municipalities and regions of those four states, paid sick time. In the entire state of California, reducing the number of crimes that are considered felonies. Drug cases are no longer felonies. You don't go to prison for drug cases anymore. In the state of Washington, they closed the gun show loophole. Gun control in the state of Washington. It passed. You get these Democratic politicians. Alison Lundgren Grimes, she's doing this ad in Kentucky where she's shooting a gun at a target, and she says, I disagree with President Obama on guns. Oh, wait a minute. What if the majority of the people would say, gun control, good idea. Ronald Reagan was in favor of gun control. Americans are not as crazy as the advisors to some of these Democrats think. In Florida, medical marijuana got more than 50% of the vote. Didn't get 60% to make it to amend the Constitution, but it got more than 50%. In New Jersey, bail bond reform. In Maui, Hawaii, they banned the planting of genetically modified organisms. The labeling requirement in Oregon is still, a toss-up. They're still counting ballots. As John Nichols pointed out in the first hour of this program, in the city that is the birthplace of the Republican Party, Ripon, Wisconsin, R-I-P-O-N, Wisconsin, 80% of the people voted to say, get money out of politics. In a Republican city. All across the country, people are voting progressive values. America is a center-left country. Forget what the corporate media tells you. The corporate media is corporate, which is kind of by definition right, as in Reich, not as in correct. The fact of the matter is that you ask Americans, and, in 45 minutes, Bernie will be with us. I'm sure he'll make this point. You ask Americans, do you think Social Security should be privatized? It's what Mitch McConnell is going to try and do. It's what he tried to do in 2005 with George Bush. You think that $2.7 trillion in the Social Security Trust Fund should be given to Jamie Dimon? Most Americans, the vast majority of Americans, say no. Do you think that Medicare should be turned into a voucher program, as Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney proposed? No. The vast majority of Americans, no. No vouchers for grandma. Do you think that our school system should be privatized? No. Do you think that we should do away with protections for clean water and clean air? No. People say, no, we shouldn't do that. Should we be reducing the regulations on our banks and letting banksters get out of jail free? No, people say. The vast majority of Americans are right there with Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I'm serious. But it's amazing what $7 billion in advertising can buy. We'll be back with your calls right after this, 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what's your takeaway? I just find this whole process very, very interesting. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Cameron in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, I was in Grand Rapids over the weekend giving a talk at the Coptic Conference. Hey, Cameron, how are you?
I'm doing really well. I'm blessed. How are you?
Pardon?
I'm blessed. How are you?
I'm fine. What's on your mind?
Oh, man, so much on my mind. I actually, for the first time in Michigan yesterday, I voted. And I thought it was important for me to do so. I didn't really get the gist of information that I should have to be able to, you know, put in my vote correctly, full-mindedly like I should have. But I did go out and vote. I thought it was important to do so. But I just wanted to just speak on a few things. I don't want to take a long time to have the music run over my voice. So I'll be quick. I appreciate this taking the call, too, as well.
Sure.
I don't think we should be worried about the color of anybody's skin when it comes to our voting, because it didn't prove anything when Obama took office. Apparently, that somehow it's an issue with everyone who's taken office. We don't know who to trust, you know what I mean? So it's kind of hard to distinguish between color and racism. We shouldn't be worried about that. We should be more worried about what's going on in the public and the policies and with our people.
But the Republicans are really worried about that. The Republicans are, you know, the larger the African American population is in a state, the more likely the Republicans are to have passed voter suppression ID laws. North Dakota, which has the least restrictive election laws in the country, right? A solidly, totally Republican state. You can walk up to the polls on election day and say, I'm here to register to vote. And a vote.
Right.
You've never seen me before. I have no ID. And you can sign up to vote and vote with no ID in North Dakota. It's a totally Republican state. It's virtually all white. Republicans don't care.
Yeah.
But in South Carolina, where you've got a large black population, or in Texas, where you've got a large Hispanic population, the Republicans are saying, oh, no, wait a minute. No. You've got to have,
some IDs. Right. This is, I don't know how they're running the system like it's a club. We're not trying to get into a club on the outside. I truly don't think we should be worried about our races. We should be worried more about what the policies are putting in place for us to be able to have things in our community to surpass and to be able to grow and whatnot. If you really want to know what's going on with the black community, look up Tim Wise and people like Bill Gates' father, who's putting the Planned Parenthood in certain areas of our hoods to be able to allow abortions to be more easy or accessible for African Americans.
Not happening.
Things like that.
Cameron, that's a myth. That's a myth. There have not been any abortion centers opened in probably a decade and a half. It's not.
And there are still abortions going on. I don't know. There's like that guy that they had on CNN. I don't even trust CNN. I don't even know why I watched it.
Yeah, that's, you know, this story that some rich white people are promoting abortion centers to reduce the black population. This is a myth that is being peddled to African Americans to get them to vote with Republicans against a woman's right to have an abortion, period. And it's a really insidious and awful lie. Cameron, thank you for the call. But, you know, hey, check your sources. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Here with you and on the line with me, Professor Harvey J. Kay, Professor of Democracy and Justice Studies at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, and author of a couple of books, the most recent, The Fight for the Four Freedoms, What Made FDR and the Greatest Generation Truly Great, and Thomas Paine and the Promise of America. Am I remembering that right, Harvey?
You got it exactly right. Good to hear your voice on a day that's otherwise not very uplifting.
Well, I find a lot of uplifting stuff about today. Virtually every ballot measure in virtually every state, regardless of how, quote, red it was, that expressed progressive values won. And the ballot measures that expressed conservative values, like this fetal personhood thing, lost. So, you know, what this says to me is that what we're seeing is the ascendance of faction, of what Madison was warning against in Federalist Number 10, self-interested wealthy parties who are putting their own interest above the interest of the country and the average person, and empowered by the Supreme Court. What do you think the founders would have said about this?
What I think the founders would have said, I think they would have been horrified. I think they would say to us, that even if we didn't use the word democracy very often, the republic itself is in jeopardy. The degree of inequality, the corporate power, the concentration of power and wealth. And by the way, I want to stand corrected. When I said on an otherwise not uplifting day, I actually expected the outcome yesterday. And as I've been telling my colleagues and my students, the real contradiction, that is that Americans want progressive, they want progressive action. I mean, I think that's pretty clear, as you were saying. It's also the case that they're prepared to vote for folks who offer nothing, nothing of a hopeful, sort. You know, and I think Thomas Paine would know what was going on. What he would probably say is that, you know, nobody's really articulating. By the way, I shouldn't say nobody. I think Bernie's coming on a bit later. Is that it?
Yeah, he's going to be with us all next hour.
I mean, Bernie's my hero, without doubt. There's a man who's speaking of the imperative of political revolution, the imperative of addressing inequality, the imperative of raising working people's wages. And Thomas Paine would recognize a system in which the politicians, the Republicans are way out to the right, okay, as FDR would have called them. They are the economic royalists' representatives. And the Democrats are doing a damn good job of ignoring and literally doing nothing, as in contrast to Bernie, about the question of inequality and the question of working people's powers and rights. And if I sounded a bit down, which I'm angry more than down, it's because, of course, Scott Walker was reelected here in the state of Wisconsin. Right. Not surprising, given that the Democrats once again put up a centrist candidate at best. Yeah. So the founders tell us, basically, in the face of these kinds of contradictions, it's imperative to mobilize Americans. Absolutely imperative. And Thomas Paine in particular would say that it's imperative that we get leaders and we get intellectuals who are able to turn these kinds of contradictions into progressive action. I mean, seriously speaking, when five states have on their agenda, including Arkansas, the idea of raising the minimum wage, and then they turn around in those same states and vote for people who are otherwise disposed, there's clearly something wrong. And the power of money is significant, but we also need, obviously, voices like yours to articulate what Americans are truly feeling and wanting.
Yeah. Where, you know, FDR was, and you point this out in your book, The Four Freedoms, FDR was one of the real transformational, the fight for the Four Freedoms was,
yeah,
you know, a transformational president who recalibrated the direction of America following the crash of 1929. The House of Representatives is now in Republican hands at a threshold that we haven't seen literally since the election of 1928. And,
right.
And when Herbert Hoover came into office, the third or fourth serial Republican, Harding, Coolidge, yeah, Hoover, the third.
Yeah.
And do you think that we're at 1928 again? And do you think that the next president, or even this president, will have the ability to start channeling FDR?
Well, let's put it this way. I think class inequality of the Gilded Age were clearly there. You would have to agree with that, correct?
Yes.
And the presence of Republicans across the country in high office, that reproduces 1928. Of course, the question would be, if there had been no Depression, would Hoover have been reelected?
Right.
And in this instance, one does not want to see the return of the Great Recession with the force of 2007 and 2008. But one wonders, what will it take to shake up the Democratic Party so that voices like, say, Elizabeth Warren start to emerge as not simply the voice over on the progressive left, but the voice at the heart of the party, or that Bernie Sanders might ever feel comfortable enough to actually enter into the Democratic Party and be embraced as some kind of leader. Now, that's the real question. How will the Democratic Party shake up? I mean, frankly, one could only hope as a progressive that Hillary Clinton decides not to run. I believe that. Okay, and that seems unlikely right now, because I fear that Democrats are going to rally around Hillary as somehow the savior of the party.
They already have, Harvey. Every woman in the Senate, every Democratic woman in the Senate has already signed a petition asking Hillary to run. My hope is that Hillary can be pushed to become a progressive. FDR,
well,
you know, I mean, you wrote the book about FDR. When he was the governor of the state of New York, He basically twiddled his thumbs while Wall Street brought down the economy.
He definitely was already experimenting as governor of New York. He had a pretty good record as governor of New York. Not the case.
All right.
But the thing is, but you are right. Can voices such as Warren and Bernie mobilize the rest of us? Can we get the labor movement active enough to start not just to ask for something in the platform, but truly to compel Clinton to not just get elected, but to pursue policies that her husband would never have pursued?
Right. And I got this aha last night. There was a couple of talking heads on TV going on and on about how, the election of 80 or 90, whatever it was, 94, 96, one of those elections where Clinton lost a lot of Congress. And
Gingrich Revolution, 94.
Yeah, 94. And all of a sudden, Bill Clinton became all friendly and, buddy-buddy with the Republicans. And, okay, we'll end welfare as we know it, and it'll be the end of big government as we know it, and, blah-de-blah-de-blah.
Oh, yeah.
And
right.
it suddenly hit me, FDR wouldn't have done that, didn't do that. I wonder if Clinton was doing that because he was setting it up for his wife.
That's a damn good question. And I know we got to go, but I'll tell you this. What I'd love to see is if Obama gets too buddy-buddy with the Republicans and puts everything back on the table, I want to see Trump gun everybody, call us all out. I want to see 2 million people on the National Mall in Washington, D.C.
I'm with you. I'll show up. Harvey Kay. Thanks, Harvey.
Thank you, Tom.
Hang on just a second,
Harvey. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Harvey's newest book, The Fight for the Four Freedoms, What Made FDR and the Greatest Generation Truly Great. You can find it at whatever your favorite local or online bookstore is. Twenty-eight minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tamika in Elmhurst, Illinois. Hey, Tamika. Thank you for calling. What's up?
Hi, Tom. I just was listening at my desk and listening to your program, streaming live on the web. And I heard one of your callers say that I, as an African-American, would vote for Ben Carson because he was an African-American and not based on his political values. And I think that just proved the point of the racist Tea Party claim.
Yeah.
That he said that they're not all racist, but to say something that, to claim that I was so unintelligent and so uninformed and so irresponsible that I would vote for Ben Carson because he was black is a complete insult to me as a person.
I agree.
So I voted yesterday, and there were no blacks on the ticket. I still voted. I couldn't believe that he said that. And I just had to speak out on behalf of educated people out there everywhere that you cannot make general statements like that against a person of color.
Or anybody.
Because we're not that naive.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're simply not that naive. Contrary to their belief that I would only support Obama or Ben Carson based on their color and not their policies. And I just wish people would stop judging others like that. We should all respect one another and not judge one another based on our color.
Very,
and assume these things of us.
Yeah. Very, very well said, Tamika. Thank you very much. I completely agree with you. Very well said. Thank you. Kathy in Georgetown, Colorado. Hey, Kathy.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I've got two comments. And, of course, I've been holding on for a long time. And everything that's been said touches on what my comments are. I grew up in Memphis, and all these years I've stayed in contact, and I never want to speak for African Americans, but this is my experience. I stayed in contact with many friends, African American friends, for over 40 years, and every time I talk with them or I go visit, because my mom's still there, there's always talk about racism or something about race, because that's normal life, particularly in Memphis, and over the years, I've never felt, even though I was hopeful, I've never felt that my friends thought that there had been any lessening of institutional racism. It just, it's a dismal situation. But that's my experience as a white woman with African American friends, that they just don't,
Well, the fact of the matter is, Kathy,
racism is alive and well.
Yeah, I was going to say the fact of the matter is that I was just going to say that racism is alive and well in the United States, and in fact, This is what white privilege is all about. If a person is white, they don't wake up every morning thinking about their race and how it's going to affect or change the nature and quality of their day. Whereas if someone is black or Hispanic or even Asian, they in all probability are going to wake up every morning being reminded of their race, and they're going to confront throughout the days, insults large and small that have to do with
Absolutely.
Their race.
Absolutely.
So it's tragic, but it's we're still
way. So my other comment is about, let's talk about Cory Gardner and Udall. Udall's represented me for 18 years. And let me first say, I just wrote Udall a thank you note for representing me so well for so long, because I did grow up in the South. And with the exception of Gore, I was subjected to, oh my God, incredible conservative politicians.
Yeah.
But I heard several years ago, before Cory Gardner even claimed, you know, even started to run, that he was a Tea Partier. My comment is that I never heard that, and I'm a news junkie, I never heard that mentioned for the ever again.
Right. He got elected to the House of Representatives as a Tea Partier, and then when he ran for the Senate, he rebranded himself, and Mara Liasson from NPR came in and helped with that rebranding, and you know, it's just, it's a reboot, a rebrand, because what the Republicans are figuring out is that the Tea Party brand is pretty badly tarnished right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got people like Joni Ernst and Cory Gardner and Tom Tillis. They're, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, they all were proudly bearing the Tea Party banner or proclaiming it from the rooftops, or other people were characterizing them as such, and they didn't turn that down. Now, you know, they're all saying, oh, no, we're just conventional Republicans. And in fact, I've been astonished here, Kathy, by how many commentators I've seen on television and how many pieces there's a piece in the New York Times today. There's another one in Politico about how the Republicans finally purged their party of the Tea Party. No, they didn't. They purged their brand of the Tea Party brand. It's all in language and messaging. It's got nothing to do with the Tea Party not being there. Tom Tillis is a Tea Partier. Cory Gardner is a Tea Partier. Joni Ernst is a Tea Partier. And on the list goes virtually every one of them who won.
About the Tea Party basically being racist is absolutely true. It's true in Colorado. That's why Cory Gardner won. Udall, you know, instead of talking about the 14 good points that the Democrats and Obama have accomplished, instead of pointing out that Cory Gardner was like a right-wing nut, you know, he came to the center and he lost.
Yeah, yeah. This is when Democrats surrender their core values, they lose their easy electability. And on the other hand, Al Franken coasted to a victory, just sailed to a victory in Minnesota. Why? Because he was embracing President Obama. He was embracing Obamacare. He was embracing, raising the minimum wage, embracing strengthening environmental protections. Kathy, brilliant analysis. Thank you so much for the call. Stanley in Tyler, Texas. Hey, Stanley, what's up?
Howdy.
Hey.
Can you hear me all right?
Just fine.
All right. First of all, again, my feet in the darkness.
Thank you.
I'm kind of slow getting my thoughts in order, so I wrote it down.
Okay.
I'm going to run over it real quick here for you. I had an opinion about the way Obama was going when he was elected the first time, due to his selection of his advisors, you know, the Wall Street people, Geithner and the rest of them. I mean, every one of them were from Wall Street, and other Bush people with Wall Street creds. Right now, I'm saying that he will not stand in the way. But as a matter of my opinion, he will expedite the Wall Street agenda.
Well, we'll see. He doesn't need Wall Street's money anymore.
Yeah, but not right now, but he needs it when he gets out. He wants to be a multimillionaire.
Yeah, I'm not that cynical, Stanley. We'll see. Time will tell. But I get your point. Thank you for the call. Steve in Long Island, New York. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I noticed something yesterday when Mitch the Turtle McConnell was speaking after he had won. He was toting that he's going to do basically what's already been done in our economy. You know, he wants to lower the deficit. He wants unemployment down. He wants all this stuff that's already been done.
Right.
I feel he's setting...
The deficit is a third of what it was when Obama came into office. Unemployment is down, 3 points since he came into office? Et cetera,
right.
Yeah.
And then today, on top of it all, we get news that we've added more jobs in the month of October than the last 5 months.
Right.
Which would have been helpful you know, yesterday morning.
I think what's going to happen is, Mitch, you're going to see a change in the messaging. You know, the media has basically been messaging that the economy sucks and it must be Obama's fault. And the messaging is going to change, because when you turn on the morning shows, the Sunday morning shows, or even the morning shows, weekday morning shows, it's Meet the Republicans, right? It's the Republicans always dominate these shows. And so they've been trashing Obama. They've been trashing the Democrats. Now they're going to start pointing out the positive things. You're absolutely right. They're going to be pointing out the positive things that have happened and taking credit for them.
Absolutely. So they're trying to set up for 2016 by saying, see, we couldn't do anything, but look, when you put us in charge, look, in 2 years, look what we did.
Right.
And that's how they're going to try to run against Hillary or anybody else that we put.
I agree.
And honestly, the best VP for Hillary would be Bernie Sanders.
Or Elizabeth Warren, either one. Yeah.
Either one, but I don't think with Elizabeth she has a shot that she would with Bernie Sanders, because there are a lot of gentlemen who won't vote for two women.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hate to say that.
Unfortunately, I think that, you know, the political reality is that you're probably right. It's unfortunate. But yeah, and I think your analysis is also accurate, Steve, and time will tell. We've got to keep these guys honest. Thanks a lot for the call. Russell in Hickory Hills, Illinois. Hey, Russell, thanks for listening to WCPT. We got a minute to the break. It's yours. Russell? Brandon in Sorrento, Florida. You want to take it?
Yeah, sure, Tom. I guess my concern is why everyone's all upset when these senators that go to Washington, they're limited by Article 1, Section 8. So all these progressive policies, legally, they can't pass them anyways. Those are to be done in the states.
No, that's not true.
Education. Education is not mentioned in the Constitution.
You don't think that your welfare has to do with whether or not you have an educated populace?
No. The general welfare is defined by the enumerated powers.
Right. Congress, Section 8, Article 1, Section 8, Sentence 1. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect duties, taxes, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. And then it ends by saying, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution of the government of the United States or any department or officer thereof. It's very, very broad. Congress, you know, this enumerated powers thing, Brandon, you know, I realize that the libertarians and a few cranky Republicans like to say it limits what Congress can do. It doesn't. It's wide open. Read the Federalist Papers.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, Alexander Hamilton wrote about this in several of the Federalist Papers, that the general welfare clause is so broad for a reason. Welcome back. Bob in Ontario, California. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great.
I'm so glad to hear that. You know, Tom, it's a funny thing that the only counter that seems to exist regarding the Republican Party and the destruction that it does is by bringing up the Democratic Party. And I have a big problem with that. There is no distinction, as a lady said today, and I wholeheartedly agree with what she said, that there is no distinguishing the difference between the two. If one party is destructive, then that means the other party has to stand in opposition of them strongly and not passively. It seems that that's what is happening from the top of this administration right down to the last guy sitting in a Democratic seat. They get out of the way of the Republicans.
Yeah, it's simply not true, Bob. It's just not true.
Well,
you know, which party is in favor of raising the minimum wage?
Yeah, okay.
No, which party is in favor of raising the minimum wage?
Okay, yeah, it's the Democrats lead that.
Okay, and which party is opposed to raising the minimum wage?
But Tom.
Which party is in favor of everybody in America having health care?
Are they going to prevent...
Which party is opposed to everybody in America having health care?
You know something?
There are simple answers to these, Bob. It's Democrats, Republicans. Democrats, Republicans. There's a big difference between the two parties.
I agree with what you're saying. It's a Democratic idea.
No, it's Democratic legislation. The Affordable Care Act was passed by Democrats.
What's happening? Because it isn't left to the American people in a true democracy to say what we want. We should be making these issues happen Not these guys in Washington.
So you want to run America like the Greeks did, where you got to have 6,000 people show up to vote on something? 1% of the population has to pop up, has to show up?
There should be 20 million people standing in Washington today demanding that these guys just leave office and let's start over. Because that's what we're really truly headed towards.
No. Bob, have you ever shown up at a party meeting?
A party meeting?
Right. Democratic, Republican, Libertarian, Green, I don't care. But any political party. Have you ever shown up at a meeting?
Why would I do that? Do I have a voice there?
Because you want to have a voice in politics. If you want your voice heard, join a political party, infiltrate it, have your say.
Okay, and when that political party fails us time and time again,
fail us if people who are sitting around complaining refuse to show up at the party.
I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to start something. And what I'm going to start is giving people information as to what each politician actually stands for and votes for in his seat. And so people can make intelligent decisions based upon the destruction that they're doing.
That's
collectively.
Great. That's great. Good on you, Bob. You know, let me know when you've got the website up. I'll promote it.
Why hasn't someone done this before?
Well, they actually have. OpenSecrets.org is a really great website that lists all the donors to every politician for federal office in the United States.
Well, remedies. Remedies, Tom. Remedies.
What do you mean by remedies?
Remedies is this. Let's tell the truth. Let's remove these destructive factors. And let's get on with making America what it never was and what it should have always been.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think, though, that step one to accomplish that is to get money out of politics. It's pretty straightforward. Bob, thank you for the call. A good spirited disagreement. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back, Tom Harbin here with you. I just got an email from Move to Amend, and I've been telling you all the incredible progressive victories all across the United States that demonstrate that America is a center-left nation. Virtually everything that was on the ballot yesterday that was a policy issue, whether it was bans on fracking, whether it was the minimum wage, whether it was pot, whether it was abortion personhood, whether it was California Prop 47, Washington gun control, Florida medical marijuana, New Jersey bail reform, GMOs in Hawaii, all of these things. Progressives won. And here, Move to Amend says, in Massachusetts, Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Florida yesterday, citizens voted overwhelmingly to pass a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. In Wisconsin, 12 communities voted in support of the amendment. In none of those communities was there less than 70%. In other words, every single community, the support was 70% or higher. These are the same people who reelected Scott Walker. 70% of them said, get money out of politics. The total of number of Wisconsin communities that have called for an amendment is now 54. 54. 16 state legislatures have voted for an amendment, as well as 600 towns, villages, cities, and other organizations. In Mentor and Chagrin Falls, Ohio, the votes were 66 and 70% respectively. In Atchalooja County, Florida, voters supported Move to Amend's campaign by 72%. America is with us. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by Goats for the Old Goat.com and free-don.org. Luke Vargas is with us from Talk Radio News in New Hampshire. Hey, Luke.
Hey, good afternoon.
So what's going on? What's the news?
Well, I'm actually in Boston now, and it's funny you were just talking about ballot measures, because I was looking at the results of these four ballot measures statewide across Massachusetts, and I sort of saw a different trend than what you were saying across the country. And I think that's a little odd, especially because this is Massachusetts. We basically voted to allow casino constructions. There was an effort by some grassroots activists here to overturn.
Yeah, but that's not a conservative progressive issue.
You're probably right. But it's certainly an issue where tons of outside money came in.
Sure.
We saw over $12 million from the gambling industry against about $500,000 from anti-casino activists. The American Beverage Association poured millions of dollars into an effort here to stop expansion of our recycling program. This would be basically those 5-cent bottle deposits expanding to water bottles and Gatorade. that was blocked, you know, essentially, and also a pretty strong sentiment of support against pegging the gas tax here in the state to increases in inflation. So I guess, you know, some of those issues aren't quite as
You're left and right,
but I seem to think it was a little bit more of a small government result.
Was it small government, or was it each one of these were ballot issues that were supported by industry, and the industry threw millions of dollars into it? And once again, it proves advertising works. There's a reason why General Motors and Procter & Gamble spend billions every year on advertising, because it changes people's opinions.
You know, hey, thankfully there was one ballot measure that I don't think was influenced that way. There was the American Federation of Retail and others were really behind this move to not expand earned sick time, and voters here in Massachusetts sort of showing the more progressive stripes, you know, overwhelmingly voting in favor of giving most people in the state the ability to earn paid sick time. So I guess that sort of bucked the trend. You know, a few other things. I was at Charlie Baker headquarters until the wee hours of last night.
Who is Charlie Baker?
He's the new Massachusetts governor-elect, a Republican. It was not until about 1:30 in the morning that he came on to speak. This race between him and Martha Coakley, who had run unsuccessfully against Scott Brown back in 2010, came down to the wire. It came down to about 40,000 votes. Martha Coakley did not concede until this morning. And when she did, a lot of pundits, and myself included, I was there to see her speak. I thought she was better than ever. A lot of people saying, God, if she'd only talked about some of these issues she talked about in her concession speech, the environment, mental health and disability and the stigma around that, reducing that. Those were issues that sort of humanized her as a candidate and showed her progressive stripes that she was seemed very hesitant to talk about during the campaign. Instead, a number of analysts saying she was talking a little bit more like a field operative.
Yeah, too many of these Democratic candidates have been listening to Democratic operatives like Bob Shrum, who keep losing elections for the people that they work for. I think Bob Shrum has lost like three or four major, you know, like presidential elections. And they say, oh, you know, got to be a moderate. No, I mean, look at Al Franken. He embraced progressive values and he easily won.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, she may have been a little bit too lawyerly at a time when she should have been the activist that she is. She's an attorney general and has, you know, represented the people of this state for quite some time.
Yeah, Sherrod Brown, Bernie Sanders, Jan Schakowsky. I mean, these people totally kick butt.
Yeah, you know, there was a very interesting editorial I read in the Globe today talking about how Massachusetts does Republicans better than the rest of the country. You know, our new governor here is pro-choice. He is in favor of gay marriage. You know, perhaps, you know, this is really not too unexpected considering the tradition of Massachusetts Republican governors. But at the same time, it shows this party could be a little bit wider than often it likes to think it is.
Yeah. See, I would say the Republicans, the core value for Republicans is raise the wealth of rich people and transfer more power to corporations away from working people. So, you know, you can throw the people a bone, give them pot legalization, give them gay marriage. It's not going to cost the billionaires anything.
Right. And he talks about the achievement gap in schools being something he really hopes to overcome. And in fact, you know, sort of the most contentious part of the end of his campaign was that he almost started to cry during a debate last week when he talked about this fisherman he met that was so upset that he had pressured his sons into declining scholarships to go to college and instead basically encouraged them to join the fishing industry. It was actually turned out to be kind of a composite story, sort of a figment of his own imagination, at least according to Martha Coakley. So in some ways, even his positions, which really seem to be a little bit more progressive.
So he had a
I don't know what the substance is.
A rehearsed, semi-progressive sounding little anecdote that was completely made up and he cried over?
Well, it's funny. Martha Coakley the next day had sent so many of her campaign supporters up to the town where this fisherman apparently existed. A number of newspaper outlets went there. They tried to find this guy. None of the fishermen said they knew anyone who fit this description.
This is like Ronald Reagan in 1980 talking about the welfare queen in her Cadillac, and the New York Times spent 6 months trying to find her. She doesn't exist.
You know, Coakley was gaining momentum on that issue, and then unfortunately the story shifted because Tom Menino passed away, and this campaign basically shut down statewide for 2 days. So who knows what would have happened if she had been able to.
Because everybody was mourning the Car Talk guy.
And that too.
Amazing. Oh, who is Tom Menino?
Our former mayor.
Oh, your former mayor. I'm sorry. I don't
know. It's okay. It's okay.
Boston. Luke Fargas. Thanks a lot, Luke.
Sure thing. Take care.
Talk Radio News brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. We'll be right back. It's Brunch with Bernie coming up next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And by the way, greetings to KSER, our newest affiliate, a 5,800-watt station in Everett, Washington. Glad to have you with us. Our third hour today is going to be our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. He's not going to be available for us on Friday, and today seems like the perfect day for the conversation. Senator, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you. I'm curious your thoughts on what happened last night.
How many hours do we have? Long, sad
One.
Story. But this is what I think. I think the Republicans ran a very, very smart political campaign. I think it's going to hurt the nation very deeply, but they ran a very smart political campaign, and this is what they said. They said, how are you feeling about the economy? How are things going for you? And people say, you know what? I'm working longer hours for lower wages. My kid can't afford to go to college. I can't afford child care. And while I'm struggling, the people on top are doing phenomenally well. I'm not really feeling good about the economy. And the Republicans said, well, do you know who the president of the United States is? It's a guy named Barack Obama. And you should hold him accountable for everything that's going on today, despite the fact that we are much better off today than we were 6 years ago. Don't think about 6 years ago. That's not relevant at all. Just think about where we are today, and are you where you want to be? And they managed to do that. And then they said, well, you know what? There's a senator out there, or a candidate, a senator out there who voted with Barack Obama 97.3% of the time, and you should blame that person and get rid of him. And in the midst of all of that stuff, Republicans forgot to tell us what their ideas are for the future of this country. You might think that after the expenditure of billions of dollars, the American people would be saying, okay, let's see, the Republicans are saying this, Democrats are saying that, independents are saying that. Let me see which idea makes sense. Of course, that's not what happened. What happened was, and by the way, the Democrats were not much better in coming forward with ideas. So what you saw is an unbelievable amount of money being spent as a result of Citizens United. You saw thousands and thousands of ugly, negative TV ads that disgusted everybody, drove voter turnout down. And you saw a situation where the Republicans didn't tell us what their agenda is. And on Election Day, they did very, very well. And Democrats suffered a devastating loss. I think in the next few days, Tom, we will learn what, in fact, the agenda is for the Republican Party. And it's an agenda that I suspect will probably reflect maybe about what 15 or 20% of the American people want. Mm-hmm. And that agenda will be the following. They're going to do quote-unquote entitlement reform. And I hope the listeners understand that whenever they hear somebody talk about entitlement reform, that's simply a cowardly way of saying we're going to cut your Social Security and your Medicare. That's what they will do. And then what they will do is say, well, we want to balance the budget. They will forget the fact that the reason we had a huge budget deficit was because of two wars under the Bush-Cheney administration that were unpaid for, huge tax breaks, much of it for the wealthy that were not offset, and other programs that were not paid for. And they will also ignore the fact that we have reduced the deficit by more than half since the 1.4 trillion record-breaking deficit that Bush ran up. But they will say, we're going to balance the budget. And by the way, we do want to spend more on the military. And oh yeah, we want to give tax breaks to the wealthy and the large corporations. Now, Tom, just think for 2 seconds here. You don't have to be a PhD in economics to figure out that if you want to balance the budget, you don't want to raise more revenue. You want to spend more money on the military and you want to give huge tax breaks to the wealthy. That the only way you're going to balance that budget is through devastating, devastating cuts in programs that middle class and working families need. And that means food stamps. It means nutrition programs. It means education. It means health care programs. It means Medicaid. It means Medicare. And that is what their agenda will be. And that's the reality. But they managed to run a campaign with the media and other people not bothering to ask them what their agenda is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we are today. And then the next question is, what does the president, what does Congress do about it? And I would hope that the president makes it very clear that, of course, politics is the art of compromise, and you got to do that. And you don't get everything you want, especially after a devastating defeat like yesterday. But that the president also demands from the Republicans that the understanding that compromise is a two-way street, not a one-way street. Yesterday, in some of the more conservative states in this country, and we've seen this in last year, people overwhelmingly supported raising the minimum wage. And what the president should say, good, you want something from me? That's fine. What I want you to do is to raise the minimum wage. The president should make it very clear that every poll that's out there indicates that the American people are very concerned about unemployment and the fact that we need to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. And I think the president should say, you want something from me? That's fine. But this is what I want you to do. I want you to invest a substantial sum of money in rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure, our roads, bridges, rail, water systems, wastewater plants, etc. And when you do that, we're going to create a whole lot of jobs. And you give me that, I'm prepared to see what you guys need. But it's got to be a two-way street, and the president can't simply surrender on issue after issue. So I hope that he remains strong, and I'll do everything that I can as an independent within the Democratic caucus to see that they remain strong.
One of the, I think, most interesting things that I noticed about last night's election is that every ballot issue, or virtually every ballot issue that was essentially progressive, minimum wage increases in Alaska, Illinois, Arkansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, Alaska, decriminalization of pot, fracking bans in Texas, California, Ohio, paid sick leaves in Massachusetts, California, Connecticut, New Jersey. I've got a long list here. All of them passed overwhelmingly, even though the candidates who oppose all these things were elected.
Tom, that is a very, very perceptive point. And I think that says it all. On issue after issue, basically economic issues, and often, but not always, environmental issues, the American people are reasonably progressive. And yet what the Republicans have managed to do is to win an election in which on almost every major economic issue, they are in opposition to the vast majority of the American people. Now, how do they do that? Well, for a start, maybe the most important point is working people or significant numbers of working people don't bother to vote.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I haven't seen the official tallies yesterday, and I know it varied significantly state by state. But what the projection was is that 60% of the American people were not going to vote, that some 75-80% of young people and low-income workers were not going to vote. So you have an election where those people who are most impacted, the young people, are impacted by decisions made by Congress. They're not voting. So you can have an election in which, you know, majority of the people don't vote and billionaires contribute huge sums of money and the Republicans do not talk about their agenda. And that's kind of what we had yesterday. And it works. And by the way, unless we get a handle on Citizens United and move to public funding of elections, I don't see any improvement in that dynamic.
Yeah. And then, meanwhile, over at the Brennan Center for Justice, Wendy Weiser is reporting, they looked at voter suppression efforts, North Carolina, Kansas, Virginia, and Florida, And in each case, the margin by which the Republican won was a smaller number than the number of people who were turned away at the polls because they didn't have appropriate ID. So this is another big problem that we have.
A huge problem.
Yeah. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. He will be taking your phone calls right after this break. Stick around. And by the way, be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can find him on Facebook. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sanders.Senate.gov is Bernie's website, and he's also got a very active Facebook page. Just get over to Facebook and plug in Bernie Sanders or Senator Sanders. And welcome back. Senator, you're still with us?
I'm right here.
Okay, we'll pick up some phone calls here. Tom, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Kalkaska, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Okay.
Yeah, Tom? Bernie, I have a question. We were talking about advertising a little while ago. You know, when they advertise like that, isn't most of the cost of it picked up by tax? I mean, you know, don't they get a tax rebate for all of the commercials?
I think what Tom is talking about is I mentioned earlier that an awful lot of these ads, particularly the ones funded by the Koch brothers, were run through 501c3s, which are tax-exempt organizations.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. These are the so-called social welfare.
Right. So you can deduct the money from your income taxes.
Well, there you go.
It's amazing. Anyway, your thoughts on that? Pardon my interrupting.
Well, it's a pretty corrupt system, is my thoughts on that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm with you. John in Sparks, Nevada. You're on the air, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Great privilege to speak to you, Senator Sanders. I speak as a person who started grade school in a town called Togus, Maine, and I later went to grad school in Madison, Wisconsin, so I come with some background. But what I want to talk about is something I've said for a long time, that the country was ready for a new political party. And I say this because, in my understanding of American history, only once in the 200-some years of the two-party system we've had did a new party come on the scene, kick one of the existing two parties into oblivion and become a major party. And I'm not here to give a quiz program. That happened after 1853,
the
beginning of the Republican Party.
Got replaced by the Republicans.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now we're, but that happened on the eve of the Civil War,
yep,
the defining crisis in American history.
Yep.
And I suggest that we may be at a comparable crisis in American history today. And so I'm even more optimistic about the fact that we will see a new party in my lifetime. And I'm 85 years old. So, and what Tom has been talking about this morning, the mismatch between the Republican Party's position and the progressive state of the American people.
Yes.
Makes me optimistic that I may see the beginning of that new party before 2016. And Senator Sanders, I nominate you. If you don't want to run for president, then become one of the leaders in that new party that's going to come on the scene, and I think we'll see a more happier future in American politics.
Okay.
And that's my rant for today, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, John. We have just a half a minute for Senator Sanders.
John gives a good rant and teaches us and reminds us a little bit about our history. And that was very informative. Look, I think everybody knows that both the Republican and the Democratic Party are held in very, very low regard by the American people. There's just no question about that. And John poses the question about whether or not a third party can evolve and play a significant role in American politics. And that is a reasonable question. The difficulty is, obviously, establishing that party in 50 states in the country, raising the significant sums of money one needs to get on the ballot, rallying candidates to run on that third party and so forth. Not an easy task. But, you know, John makes the point that probably more than any time in recent history, you're seeing more and more people saying, no, I'm not interested in the Republicans or the Democrats.
Yeah, tragically. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour 2 days early and a couple hours late. Eddie, in the third hour of our Wednesday program, Senator Sanders live on the line with us, and Dave in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. It's an honor to speak with you, Senator.
Good. Thank you, Dave.
I have a question about our voting machines. I don't understand. Nobody seems to want to talk about this after an election because it on some level it sounds like just sort of sour grapes complaining. But I just can't believe that we're expected to accept the fact that our voting process is completely owned and controlled by corporate-owned electronic voting machines that we're not even allowed to check. How is that possible, and what can we do about it? What can you do about it?
Well, Dave, I know that Tom has written about this and has spoken a whole lot about that. I'm going to let him answer your question.
Okay. I just think it's an affront to democracy that we have privatized our vote. It's the beating heart of democracy. Of all the things in our commons that should be run by government, the vote is the most important, and it should not be in the hands of private corporations. I think we should go back to paper and stop subsidizing these corporations.
Good. As you and I have discussed many, many times, and I know this is an issue you have studied, I absolutely agree with you. You know, people argue, well, maybe a paper ballot is going to take too long to count and so forth and so on. But the Canadians, I think, use paper. They get their results out quickly, and I don't think there's a whole lot of debate about whether or not the results are accurate.
Yeah, and pretty much every country in Europe and all over the world. Chris, in Asheville, North Carolina, listening on WPVM. You're on the air, Senator Sanders.
Hey, it's an honor to talk to you, Senator Sanders. I'm feeling kind of hopeless here in North Carolina. There wasn't much of a choice here. Kay Hagan, I really blew it. Based on what one understand about demographics here of the Hispanic population, that was a legal voting population of about 3%, and she lost it by about 1.5%, and it seemed pretty obvious that could have solved the problem, along with a lot of other things. You touched on earlier, Tom, about how if we would just be progressive, our candidates would work. What are we going to do about it? What are we going to do about the fact that we want you to run, and I'm really concerned that the system, as it stands, won't allow somebody such as yourself, somebody with real integrity, with real values, to be able to compete with this, with the money and the machine. What are we going to do?
Well, Chris, thank you very much for your kind words. I think the first thing we have to do is recognize the severity of the problems that we face, and they're not only all of the economic problems that Tom and I and everybody else talks about, they are the political problems. And the political problems is the deck is stacked for a variety of reasons against candidates who want to represent working people in the middle class. Those candidates are not going to get the support of billionaires or the Koch brothers. And then you got a media out there which, you know, people talk about, well, why aren't Democrats or others talking about these issues? And sometimes that's a very valid criticism. I mean, as I've said a million times on this show, I don't think the Democrats are anywhere near as progressive as they should be in terms of standing up for ordinary people and taking on big money interest. But you would be surprised that a lot of times when folks do that, it doesn't get a whole lot of media attention. And how do you deal with that one? How do we communicate? I mean, Tom Hartman and other talk show hosts, progressives, do a great job. But Tom is outnumbered 10 to 1 or more, 20 to 1, in terms of the amount of time the progressives have on the air as opposed to right-wing folks. How do we deal with that issue? How do we more effectively use the Internet to communicate our ideas? How do we educate young people? Probably one of the saddest things about yesterday is the fact that, you know, probably 80% of young people did not come out to vote. While they are going to be most impacted by the decisions made by a Republican Congress, how do we address that issue? So, you know, I think, Chris, there are some huge issues out there that we got to think hard about. We've got to put them on the table, make a diagnosis. How do we go forward? On the other hand, what is very positive, and Tom and I just chatted about this, is that when you ask people their views, you go up to them and say, do you think we should raise the minimum wage? What is it, 70% think yes, Tom?
Yeah, in five states.
70% wins in five states. Do you think we should have pay equity for women workers? Overwhelmingly. Do you think we should have a jobs program creating millions of jobs, rebuilding infrastructure? Absolutely. Do you think we should change our unfettered free trade policies, which enable corporations to go to China and lay off American workers? Oh, yeah, we gotta change that. Do you think we should make higher education affordable? Tom and I have talked 40 years ago. 40 years ago in this country, some of the best universities, public universities, University of California, City University of New York, free, tuition free. Today, working class families can't afford it. So on all of those issues, Chris, we have the people with us. But how do you bring people together? Which you can. You can do it, but we ought to be very smart about it. When they are assaulted every single day by 30-second ads, by a media which will not discuss these issues, it ain't easy. I think we can do it, but we got to be smart about it. So, Chris, thank you very much. I think you raised exactly the right questions, and we've got to figure it out.
Yeah. But if we just have 45 seconds. Move to amend. I just got an email from them that in Massachusetts, Ohio, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Florida, people passed constitutional amendments or a call for them. On average, over 70% of the vote to overturn Citizens United.
And this is not a progressive issue. This is across the board. If you're a conservative, you know what? You don't want billionaires buying elections. So that's just one more issue. So here is the irony. You got a party that will take control of the United States Senate that has an agenda that maybe reflects 15 or 20% of the American people. But they're able to get away with that stuff because they don't talk about their agenda, and they run huge numbers of 30-second ads paid for by the billionaire class. So that's, you know, the issue that Chris raises. How do we deal with that? And it ain't easy. It can be done, but we got to be really thoughtful about it.
It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, 2 days early here on Wednesday. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this. Be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. Stick around. Be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can also drop into Bernie's Facebook page. Just plug Bernie Sanders or Senator Sanders into Facebook and you'll get there. Twitter is Senator Sanders. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour for this week. 2 days early, and the senator is going to be traveling on Friday, won't be available, and we're live. It's the day after the elections, and Senator, you're with us?
I am right here.
Okay. Sharon, in Bellingham, Washington, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I need to be talked back from the ledge a little bit. I'm 64 and a half, and I'm going to have a fairly minimal Social Security. I'm fortunate that I've been saving since my 20s, so I have things, but it's in mutual funds and things like that. And I am afraid that Social Security and Medicare may have died yesterday. What can we do about this?
Okay.
Am I over-exaggerating?
Yes, you are. All right. Don't get off the ledge. All right. You're back in your house there. Lock the window.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Look. Social Security and Medicare are not going to disappear with the results of this election. That's not going to happen. I will not allow it to happen. Most of the people in the Democratic caucus will not allow it to happen. The president will not allow it to happen. So it ain't going to happen. What I fear will happen is attempts to cut Social Security through a so-called chain CPI, which will lower the cost of living adjustments that seniors get. And not only seniors, but disabled veterans, people on disability. They will make that effort, and many of us will vigorously oppose that effort. So just because they make the effort does not mean it's going to succeed, and I will do everything I can to make sure that the president vetoes that type of legislation. In the House, what the Republicans did is not end Medicare. They significantly transformed it in a very bad way. They wanted to. It didn't go into effect, of course, to a voucher program by which they would give people an $8,000 check in order to go out and get private insurance. And I think in the House proposal, it didn't apply to people who are on Medicare, but people who would in a few years be on Medicare. So don't think that Social Security is going to disappear tomorrow or Medicare is going to disappear tomorrow. That is not going to happen. And many of us are going to do our best to prevent any cuts to these terribly important programs. In other words, as I have said many, many times, in terms of Social Security, our goal must be to not only not cut it, but to expand it, because many seniors just can't live on the $12,000 or $13,000 a year that they're getting. All right, are you off the ledge now?
She's dropped off the call, but I that was very reassuring. David in Phoenix, Arizona, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. David?
Hello? Oh, David, yes. Senator Sanders, just as global warming as a tipping point, the point of no return, when will the point come when the oligarchy is so well established that we can't return to a democracy? I think it could happen in 2016 if we lose the presidential election. If the Democrats win the 2016 election, it'll just delay the tipping point. The only way the tipping point will disappear is when the Democrats win the presidency in both houses. What do you think, Senator Sanders, when do you think we might reach a tipping point?
Well, David, you ask I think a fair question. And I think what David is saying, if you have a billionaire class that has literally unlimited sums of money to spend on elections, if you have a billionaire class that significantly owns much of the media, is it possible that the day will come that no matter what the needs of working people are, what the desires of working people are, that they will never be able to make the kinds of changes that are needed to improve their lives, that the billionaire class, if you like, the establishment, will be so entrenched that they just cannot be removed from power. And that is not a crazy thought, and that's a reasonable, I think, analysis. I mean, we went through a period where 6 years ago, the people on Wall Street engaged in highly illegal behavior, and their penalty for destroying the lives of millions of people and sinking the United States economy into the worst recession since the Great Depression, their penalty was that they got bailed out, and that a few years later they were making more money than they ever did before, and they had to pay some fines, but none of them went to jail. So I think, you know, they did it. They committed huge crimes and nothing really happened to them. And yet at the same time, I think David's point is that you got a whole lot of working people, a majority of working people in this country who are working longer hours for lower wages, deeply worried about the lives of their kids, can't afford child care for their babies, worried about their retirements, and does anyone stay up nights worrying about them? And what can they do about it? Can they take on the billionaire class? Well, David asks a very legitimate question. David, I honestly don't know the answer. I think about that all the time.
Craig in St. Petersburg, Florida. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, how you doing there, Senator Sanders?
Good.
Sanders and also Tom. I tell you what, I'm very upset. I'm a registered independent, but I'm a progressive like yourself. And I'm tired of the DNC constantly defending themselves against their own platform. When they ought to be taking a more aggressive and progressive stance and put the Republicans on their heels. You know, we never get our point across to the majority of people that we are the ones that are behind them. You know, and, you know, the Republicans just they just beat the same drum and we're constantly on the defense. And so I guess I'd like to know, when are we going to get somebody in charge of the DNC that actually takes a more progressive route?
Well, Craig, I think you make a good point, but it's not just the DNC. You know, the people who are head of the DNC work for the Democratic Party and work for the elected officials and so forth and so on. So I wouldn't just say it's an issue of the DNC. I think what you're really asking is when are the Democrats, if ever, going to make it clear that they stand for the needs of working families, and when are they going to define those issues, and when are they going to come up with proposals to address the problems they've defined, and when are they going to take on the big money interests who are the cause of so many of our problems? And the answer is, I don't know. I, like you, am an independent who caucuses with the Democrats. No question in my mind that the Democratic Party is far superior to the Republican Party. But there's also no question in my mind that there are a whole lot of Democrats who are not prepared to stand up to the moneyed interests because they need those moneyed interests to get campaign contributions just like the Republicans do. But I think, Craig, that what we have got to do is articulate a very clear agenda that, in fact, if implemented, would reverse the decline of the middle class, and it would create millions of jobs and raise wages. Let me just tick off just a few of the things that I think we have to do. Number one, maybe most importantly, real unemployment today is close to 12%, youth unemployment 20%. We need a massive federal jobs program to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. If you spent $1 trillion, which is one-third of what we spent in the war in Iraq, a war we never should have gotten into, $1 trillion would create 13 million jobs and make this country much more productive. I think we should do that. I think we should raise the minimum wage to at least 10 an hour. I would go further than that. That would be a pay raise for 25 million Americans. American people strongly support that. I think we should go forward with pay equity. Women deserve equal pay for equal work. I think we need to change our trade policies so the companies are not given a green light to go to China or other low-wage countries and throw American workers out on the street. I think we need to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel to address the planetary crisis of global warming. And maybe most importantly, I think we need a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United and move to public funding of elections. You do those things, and you have transformed the American society. You've created jobs, make college affordable, make sure that our kids, regardless of income, get a decent education. You fight for that agenda. You demand that the wealthy and the powerful start paying their fair share of taxes. You demand that they don't shut down in this country their companies and move to China. You know what? A lot of people are going to say, right on, let's do it. Let's go together. So I think, you know, that's what we need. We need that agenda. We need to rally the American people around that kind of agenda.
Yeah. We just have 50 seconds. It was Ross Perot, a billionaire, who was championing that, you know, many years ago. Where are the voices now?
Well, again, it's Ross Perot was, I thought, very effective in talking about the trade issue and NAFTA.
Yeah.
But Ross Perot also was a billionaire who was, you know, and it's funny. I remember like it was yesterday. Remember, he used to do these half-hour advertisements, and he used to have a chart and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And people laughed at him. Nothing to laugh about. I give the guy credit. He was trying to educate the American people in a way other than a 30-second ad. And what he said then turned out to be right. These trade agreements are a disaster for the American working class of this country, and they've resulted in the loss of a whole lot of factories and decent-paying jobs.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, 2 days early here on the Tom Hartman program. We'll be back with more of your questions for the senator after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your questions for Senator Sanders in just a moment. Check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. Welcome back. Kyle, watching Free Speech TV on the cable system there in Salt Lake City, Utah. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, thank you, Senator Sanders. You started the conversation talking about voter apathy. And I see as long as there's corporate domination of both the Republican and, in a large degree, the Democratic Party, this is going to continue. I'll give the example in Virginia. Mark Warner was for drilling off the coast of Virginia, for the XL pipeline, for chain CPI, change for increasing the age in which you can get Social Security. There's no choice between the two parties in some places. What can we do to increase that progressive choice? And perhaps maybe even, I don't think Hillary Clinton's going to do it in 16. Maybe you and Elizabeth Warren can provide that choice for us in 16.
Well, thanks, Kyle, for that good question. You know, and I think you make a right point. If a candidate goes forward and his or her views are not terribly different than the Republicans, people can say, what's the difference? Why should I come out to vote? So I do believe that what we need is a unprecedentedly strong grassroots movement which is fighting for a progressive agenda and which says to any candidate that is not prepared to support a progressive agenda, sorry, you may be the nicest person in the world, but we're not supporting you. And we are going to find a candidate to run against you and to support that agenda. So I think what we need to do is to rally the American people around ideas that make sense to them. And what drives me a little bit nuts, or more than a little bit nuts, is the idea that you have a Republican Party which just won a huge victory yesterday, and when you talk to them about their agenda, which they're kind of loath to talk about, you find out that that agenda represents maybe what 15 or 20% of the American people believe in. Just yesterday, and Tom was going through a whole litany of issues, ballot items that the American people voted on, minimum wage being perhaps the clearest, overwhelming support for raising the minimum wage. Tom, how many states yesterday?
Five states.
Five. What, do you recall the states? Do you have them in front of you?
I have the list, yeah. It was Alaska, Arkansas, Nebraska, and South Dakota, and in Illinois, it wasn't passed as a law. It was passed as an advisory to the legislature.
All right. Four out of five of those states, Republicans won.
Yep.
And in four out of five of those states, the Republicans opposed raising the minimum wage, to the best of my knowledge. And in some cases, they want to abolish the minimum wage. So the question that we ask, and it's not just the minimum wage, it is all kinds of economic issues that will benefit working families. The Republicans are way, way in the minority on those issues. And yet they win elections because they see politics as like a shell game. They divert attention, get your eyes off of the prize. And they talk about everything under the sun except the agenda that they have for working families. I would be willing to wager, maybe somebody will call in and tell me I'm wrong here, but with all of the billions of dollars spent on television ads, I doubt that there was one ad which said, vote for me so I could cut your Social Security and your Medicare and give tax breaks to billionaires. What do you think, Tom? You think there are any ads out there?
I sort of doubt it, unless it was an ad that was put on a DVD and sent to billionaires.
Yeah, maybe. But that is exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Or try to do. I mean,
there you go.
We'll do our best to prevent that from happening.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us, back with more of your questions for Senator Sanders right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and it is our Brunch with Bernie hour 2 days early. Senator Sanders with us on this Wednesday after Election Day. On Friday, he's going to be traveling, so we'll just do Anything Goes Friday. Brandon, in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1 FM, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator and Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I am extremely frustrated after yesterday, obviously. And I've often wondered if in order to get to a better place, we might just have to let everything loose. Maybe we should allow them to carry out their agenda in full and let people feel it. Let it hit home. Let it hit hard. As you were saying earlier, the messaging is just not getting through to young people. And I don't know. What's your take on that?
Well, thanks, Brendan. And, you know, there are a lot of people who would agree with you. I don't, and I'll tell you why. Number one, obviously, it's as a United States Senator, I'm not going to participate or allow things to happen that I can stop, which would make life more difficult for people who are already struggling. That's number one. Number two, I am just not of the theory that when people are really desperate, so if you allow policies to go forward, which would lower incomes for working families, increase poverty, increase hunger in America, increase homelessness in America, that somehow people will say, okay, enough is enough. These guys have caused these problems, and we're going to take them on. I just don't think it works like that. I think when people are beaten up and made really desperate, sometimes their anger is going to come out in unexpected ways and not necessarily against the people who caused those problems. So I do understand your frustration, and we're going to have to figure out a way to fight our way through this. And you know, I believe that we can. We're going to have to be awfully smart because we're up against a lot of money and a lot of smart people. Again, I would argue that what Republicans did yesterday was nothing less than brilliant. They managed to hide what their agenda is. They managed to blame the president for things that he is not culpable for and pull it off and manage to keep the voter turnout very low so that a lot of folks who should be voting did not vote. And we got to figure out how we reverse that. Not easy task, but we can do it.
Grant in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, Mr. Sanders, I wish you'd run for president, too, but the Republicans wouldn't let you do anything either. I'd like to say that up front. I've got an issue with my own personal senator, Tom Coburn, and he made a claim to the media that there was somebody who was a veteran, and I'm a veteran, and 40% disabled, and I'm getting $1,358 a month and have since 1993. And it's going to change at age 59 to $1,538. I paid for that almost with my life to get it. And Tom Coburn claimed that there was a veteran who was triple dipping and making $229,000 a year off the government from Social Security, officer's pay. And I was an officer also. I retired as an O2 out of the 45th out of Oklahoma. And making a long story short, he said that he was making $229,000 a year, and I don't believe him.
Grant, thanks very much. Number one, thank you very much for your service. Look, it's no secret that your senator, who is retiring now, really is not a great fan of government programs. And I don't want to speak for him, but I think if he had his way, he would certainly make devastating cuts to programs that millions and millions of people depend upon to live with a shred of dignity. He is one of the more conservative members of the Republican Party. You know, nothing that he says really surprises me because I've heard it for years.
Al in St. Louis, Missouri. We have 2 minutes to the end of the show. Quick question for Bernie, Al.
Yes, Bernie, or Senator Sanders, I'm sorry. Where do we go from here when the problem with the depths and breadths of the misinformation and the propaganda campaign that we're facing, this barrage of money and propaganda, to the point where I sat next to a gentleman, an older gentleman this morning at breakfast, and he was talking about we need to release all those trillions of dollars of foreign profits come back in so that we can get our roads and bridges built. That's their latest propaganda campaign. Bring that money back. We'll put it to work for the country.
Bring it back tax free. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mentioned to them, well, you know, the last time they had this tax amnesty from all these foreign profits, they basically just did stock options and dividends.
Let's let Bernie respond, Al.
Well, I think Al got it exactly right. That is exactly what they did. So what, you know, the Republicans will do is come up with the goal there is to allow corporations to bring their money back from tax havens and not pay any or very, very little taxes on it. That's what the goal is. And they'll spruce it up by saying, oh, I'm going to use it for this, that, and the other thing. But Al is exactly right. We saw that movie in the past, and it certainly did not do what they said it would do.
Senator, about 45 seconds, final thoughts.
All right. I think the final thought is that a lot of people are hurting today from what happened yesterday. And our job is to think it through. These are incredibly difficult times in terms of the struggle that people are going through economically. They are incredibly difficult times politically in the sense of big money dominating what happens in this country. Is there a solution? There is. And we're just going to have to be smart. We're going to have to think it through. We're going to have to figure out ways to educate and organize, and we have no choice but to go forward and do that.
Senator, thank you so much for the inspiration and for the visit.
Okay, Tom.
Thank you very much. We will be back tomorrow. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires your participation. It still does. Even with a crummy election, like, well, there was some actually good news in this election. But, you know, it still requires your action. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.